Welcome to My Favorite Neighbors. I'm Sis.
I'm Squirt. I feel like there are rules for hour-long teen shows or any type of, I feel personal, hour-long dramedy or comedy drama that are necessary. And I am just now starting to watch Supernatural, the hour-long teen drama on the CW, and I just kind of feel like there are certain elements that would just make it better, and it takes some time to grow. They don't all have to exist in the first episode, but because I watch so much TV, there's certain things that, like, just you notice shows that make it work. Mm-hmm. And so the number one thing I say, and a friend of mine said that I say this like it's an actual term, but I think it's an actual term, is like every show, specifically a show like Supernatural or a show like Chuck or a show like Buffy, which is where it came from, needs a Scooby gang.
Well,
which technically came from
Scooby.
But the first time I really paid attention to, like,
the first time someone made a reference
to it was on Buffy. And it's like, you need a Scooby gang, because no matter how well you write the title character, the protagonist, the lead character, not everyone's going to like him.
Right.
So you need to have the Scooby gang so that there are other characters that people can love slash hate, mm-hmm. slash love to hate. Like, but you have to have that. And I feel like every show, when I go back and think of every show that I've ever loved or liked, there's been an ensemble-ish, not necessarily an ensemble cast, because ensemble cast means everyone has equal footing. There may have been a lead, but there's always a Scooby gang of people. And, like, Supernatural is that, like, the first season focuses on these two brothers, which is perfectly fine, because mm-hmm. we're getting to know these two brothers. But after a while, these two brothers get boring. Like, there's mm-hmm. only so much you can do with these two brothers. Every week, it's a new big bad of fighting a ghost. So you totally need a Scooby gang. My second rule is that I like the introduction into characters. I mean, I know that there is this push, or I feel like it's one of those things that people never remember from TV shows, of, like, just meeting all of the characters at once.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't do that. You mm-hmm. have to meet the character through somebody. And generally, it's the protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of things like Grey's Anatomy. Mm-hmm. And Grey's Anatomy, once again, kind of has a Scooby gang-ish mm-hmm. bit, because there are all these other characters. But generally, it's the protagonist. But it doesn't have to be the protagonist. Like, it could be the villain. It could be someone...
That would be really interesting. I don't think we've seen that in a while, but that'd be fun.
But it doesn't have to be someone you like, but there's got to be someone that you... that you, as the viewer, introduces you to everyone.
Right.
So they could be at a party and you just follow them around. And they're like, hi, Matt the plumber. Hi, Jake the wall painter. Hi, Mike the lawyer. But there's got to be one person. You can't just put me in a room and then do the exposition through conversation.
Right.
So how's the law practice going? How's the painting going? How's that? I got to have one character that I meet through. And the not the problem, like, a lot of times they generally try and make it the character that's supposed to be the lead,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes you don't like them.
Right.
But I like that exposition. I really hate being just dropped into a situation or an action sequence or something where they're just tons of characters and I'm just supposed to pick up who they are. I have to relate to someone.
You know what's really interesting? I was just listening to, this is a really old one, an NPR podcast of Wait, Don't Tell Me, and they had the creator of The Wire and Treme.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things he actually said was he actually prefers to not give any exposition. He mm-hmm. He's known for, I never watched either of those series,
mm-hmm.
he's known for just dropping you into it and just making you sink or swim. And, you know, it's frustrating for viewers who are used to someone telling you that this is this person or that's that person, but it's ultimately fulfilling because you start to invest in the characters and in the storyline. So he was mentioning, but I think the point of what you're saying is these aren't rules for all shows, but these are rules for teen shows or young adult shows.
Yeah, and I'm not totally against exposition. I mean, I'm not totally against being dropped in, but I need to be dropped in through one character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't mind being dropped into the middle of the fight, mm-hmm. as long as, like, I'm fighting from one point of view. Like,
yeah, and Treme, I mean, I know of the amount I've seen of Treme, no, you're not. It's, you don't know Unless you watch it, you don't know
who's going on. Yeah, like, I don't, because it's just, like, I'm kind of like, I don't care about you. Like, you have to give me a point, I mean, this is me. You have to give me a point to start from. Mm-hmm. You have to give me a point to, am I supposed to hate this person or like this person? Am I supposed to move, you know, do this or do that? And I don't mind if it changes and we get depth into it, you mm-hmm. know, but that's part of the fun of the show. It's yeah. like the guy that you thought was a villain now suddenly is the good guy. Yeah. And the guy who was a perfect angel is now killing people. Like, I totally don't mind that change, but I do, and that's probably why I don't watch The Wire or Treme. Like, I just, it's not fun for me, because I don't care. I have to establish a place of caring. And
you know what, you brought up a good thing though. I really hope that, like, in the new crop of shows, that the intro or exposition does come from the villain. Like, we haven't had that in a while, mm-hmm. and I would love that. Mm-hmm. I would really love that. Now, granted, I don't really know what's coming up in the new crop of shows. It really looks like a lot more half-hour comedies mm-hmm. with big movie star names. Yeah. But if, you know, there is a new hour long, I would love to have an intro from essentially the person you're supposed to hate.
Yeah, which, in all fairness, before it got crazy, was kind of how Gossip Girl started.
Yeah, like, I can see that.
Like, we started with Blair. Like, mm-hmm. Blair was the one, and we knew that Serena, it's the two Serena characters. Serena is the blonde, and she's supposed to be the prodigal child and the one that everyone loves. And Blair is the one that we start with, though. Mm-hmm. We start meeting her first, mm-hmm. and she's kind of the evil bitch. I mean, mm-hmm. she grows a heart, and, mm-hmm. and you realize that she's just really shallow and she's not all bad. But still, they did kind of start, and we met Serena through Blair, mm-hmm. and we met all the other characters through Blair. She didn't like Dan. Like, I mean, that's kind of how we met her, but she wasn't the star, quote unquote. Serena really was the star, but then it becomes an ensemble cast, right. In all fairness.
Right.
And the other thing is that, what I was going to say about the Scooby Gang, mm-hmm. is that it also adds, like I said, they don't like everybody, but it also adds the comic relief. Generally, yes. The funny friend person is in the Scooby Gang, right. And they need him there to be the foil, because we want, most of the time, the leader of our Scooby Gang is the protagonist, and we kind of want our leader to be the straight, sensible one who would do what we would do, or what we would think we should do in that situation. And sometimes we have our flawed lead characters, which we like.
Right.
Also, we like our flawed characters also that maybe try to do the right thing, but are just flawed mm-hmm. in some way. So the Scooby Gang adds the comic relief, yeah. which is fantastic. And it also adds the sexual chemistry or the sexual tension. If they add an opposite sex in the Scooby Gang, if the lead is female, they have a male in there who kind of has a crush on her, or vice versa. And we love that sexual tension. I mean, if you look at Chuck and Sarah, right. it was kind of perfect. And we all crave, you know, that chemistry of people like, will they, won't they, will they, won't they.
But there are times when it just doesn't work. I mean, like, you can see that it was meant to be. Like, the writers meant it for this to happen, and it just doesn't pan out. Like, the one I'm thinking of right now is Buffy. Okay, so in the movie, uh-huh. Buffy gets with Pike.
Uh-huh.
And so Pike is, for all intents and purposes, her Scooby Gang in the movie.
He is, yeah.
In the TV series, it seemed like the role of Xander was uh-huh. supposed to fill that role. And I think by, like, the fifth episode, they realized this was not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And just sort of retooled it and sort of created the Angel character, mm-hmm. which then became her focus.
Yeah.
But
and he was kind of a tangential part of their Scooby Gang, too. Like,
yes,
he was on her,
in the beginning.
He was on
You're
her
right.
side,
You're
you
right.
know, with the fight, which You're is right. fair. And so, but as I was saying, I was watching Supernatural. They don't have a Scooby Gang on Supernatural.
And you are up to where now in that?
I've finished season two.
Okay.
And they kind of...
So even at the end of season two, they don't even have a Scooby Gang?
No, it's like a false start.
Oh.
Like, they kind of started and didn't start and started and didn't start. Mm-hmm. And so they introduced some new characters that mm-hmm. are kind of on their side, but they're not really the Scooby Gang-ish. And maybe that's the vein of the show, because they do exist in their car.
Okay.
You know, but like, which is another thing I will get to.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think part of the chemistry of it, which is, I think they should have a lesbian or gay character in the Scooby Gang. Like, if the male is the lead, have a really hot lesbian in the Scooby Gang. So that way you can always have that sexual tension, never going to happen.
Okay.
Because the character's lesbian.
Right.
So the guy can have a crush on her as much as he wants. Mm-hmm. They can put her in skimpy clothes. They can make them in the most awkward situations mm-hmm. where they're close and hot and about to kiss, but she's not going to sleep with him. Like, it's just like...
Didn't they sort of do that for Dark Angel?
I don't remember.
Did it work?
I don't remember.
The original Cindy in Dark Angel was a lesbian. And she was in Alex. What was Jessica Alba's character name? Mac? Okay. I don't remember. Uh-huh. Anyway, I think... I don't know if that worked, but then again, you had a female lead, so
yeah.
I don't really know.
Yeah, but that type of tension, I think, would just solve problems across the board, because the thing that always happens is that once the two characters get together, the chemistry's gone, and...
Because they don't flirt.
Because they don't
they
flirt
anymore.
They
stop flirting.
Yes, exactly, and I was like, if they kept them flirting, it'd be fine, but, like, they stop the flirting, and you're just like, I don't know what to do, but you could constantly flirt and would never be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, the fact that they don't really have a Scooby Gang also ties on to the fact that, at least in, that every teen show needs to have a castle or a home base, which is where they come back to.
And castle's a reference from what?
Castle's a reference from Chuck.
Okay.
Because it's the easiest one to say, but every single episode that I've watched, there's always, like, one spot. For Buffy, it was the library.
And then it was the house.
Even for Desperate Housewives, they kind of would meet in a little group.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of other shows. But
I am too.
But they always have like a kind of area.
A safe house.
A base, yeah, that was safe where they could all sit. In Tower Prep, it was the kind of upper attic.
Oh, yeah.
That they would all gather.
That's the one thing they got right.
Yeah, in Warehouse 13, it's like Warehouse 13.
The warehouse.
Yeah, from the episodes that we watched.
Yeah.
It. And so like they need a little like castle base. And as a viewer, it's like, it's your little safe place too,
mm-hmm.
that maybe people don't know about, but it's like your clubhouse. And
except it's also the most attacked place ever.
It is, but it's also kind of fun when they have to defend it.
Yeah.
Or take care of it. But it's kind of necessary. It's like, that's where they store stuff. Otherwise, it's like in Supernatural, they're doing research in public libraries.
Mm.
And I'm kind of like, no, you need a home computer that's mm-hmm. super powerful, can unlock anything. It's like the Batcave.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
You have to have that
spot. You have to have a base of operations.
Base of operations. And the back of your car, Sam and Dean, doesn't work. So I was like, a castle is always necessary for all of these shows.
Yes.
And all of them can be done in different different sequences and different levels. It's not always like the same thing. But I just kind of feel that the shows that miss that, there's an element missing and they don't last long. Like people are always kind of wanting that.
Yeah.
And in the end, they either end up being created or they end up getting kicked off the air.
Mm, that's possibly true. So one of the best castles, quote unquote, that we've seen in a while was actually in Green Hornet. Okay, I'm gonna get these confused all freaking summer. So we finally watched the Green Hornet. I didn't want to see it. I wasn't like a vehement like knee-jerk reaction. I just don't want to see this. I'm too above superhero movies. That's not it. I really like superhero movies, but I had felt that we were done or over marveled. I'm going to put that word out there.
Uh-huh.
We had been over-marveled. We had been over-DC comic'd with the superhero origin story thingies.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't interested in seeing Thor. I'm still not. I wasn't interested in seeing Green Hornet. I'm not interested in seeing Green Lantern. And it has nothing to do with the writers or the actors or anything. It's just I'm over-marveled. I'm over-origined.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if that can take this back even to like Wolverine when we saw the origins of like Wolverine, but anyway, so I was finally convinced that I needed to watch this, so we watched it, and I actually had a grand time watching this movie. It was quite fun. It was very fun, and I would actually say it's like the antidote for origin movies. And I was concerned about Seth Rogen,
mm-hmm.
because as much as I love him and I love his sort of character that he has created, sort of the affable loser.
Self-effacing.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I was concerned about his ability to do this, but I really, really, really liked him in this.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought he did an excellent job.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the gadgets. I loved all of it. I even love the style. I thought Cameron Diaz's character was a little odd, but she was needed. I just, maybe a little miscast. I don't know. I give her props. But I just really, really liked the whole movie, and I didn't expect to. I really didn't expect to.
I agree with you. I was pleasantly surprised mm-hmm. by how much I enjoyed it. I expected to go into it and be like, great. I think part of it is that, yes, we've been over Marveled. I will take that. And let's say over comics. I actually think Green Hornet's like DC or something. Like,
okay, fine.
Not a Marvel comic, but I don't remember. But like, but yes, I do agree with that. But I also feel we've been over graphiced. Like, yes. I think that's part of it, too, is it for because so many of these have been comic book heroes, and comic book superheroes and powers are fantastical. And so they fly, have wings, shoot things, blah, blah, blah. So you end up with all of these special effects and no story or no acting right. sometimes. It's like there'll be 20 minutes of special effects and absolutely no acting done.
But I also think there's been just a whole lot of origin stories, and we've got more coming up.
Well, the thing is that they kind of have to do origin stories when they do a movie. They can't this I mean I'm not for nothing but it's like they're not just gonna do a movie where Thor already exists. People want to know who's Thor.
They've done it. They used to do it where it was just understood that this person already existed. The early Batmans, it was just understood that Batman exists in Gotham. Mm-hmm. The early X-Men, it was just understood that
the school already existed. That's not true. They would give you the Batman backstory, which just always the same, that his parents died,
right? And it was like 5 minutes. Exactly. It wasn't a 2-hour movie.
No, that's correct.
Now
that's
they're
correct.
Taking what used to be 5 minutes yeah. and making 2-hour movies out of it, and they've done it. I mean, they're doing it with the new X-Men class. They did it with Thor. They did it. Green Hornet. What I feel about Green Hornet is it's a beginning story, but it's not an origin story. Mm-hmm. I just felt it wasn't an origin story. It could very well fit into that category. But I'm over-origined. Mm-hmm. I really am mm-hmm. right now. I mean, even the first Transformers story, I feel didn't sit with me as an origin story. Mm-hmm. It sat with me as here's how Sam Zwicky,
Witwicky,
whatever, uh-huh. gets a Transformer, uh-huh. but it's not like the Transformer origin story. Uh-huh. And
they do, and in that one, just to add to you, they do 5 minutes towards the middle to the end explaining why they're on the Earth looking for the Allspark, but it's only 5 minutes.
5 to 10
minutes.
It's
not like a 2-hour movie about the destruction of their planet.
Right, and how they became sentient beings uh-huh. all made of metal. And why they fight. Oh my god, I cannot express how over origin I am. But anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah, no, I thought that, like I said, I agree. I thought the Green Lantern Green Hornet, because I'm looking at the word lantern right now. But I always thought the Green Hornet was good and fun. And like I said, I feel like we've been over-CGI'd. Mm-hmm. But I felt that because this, similar to Batman, except these last two Batmans, we've been a little CGI'd it too, is the fact that he's a man, mm-hmm. not a superhero.
Yes, he just has cool gadgets.
Yeah, and the original Batman was a man, not a superhero, and he was just a guy with cool gadgets. Yeah. So it wasn't like you didn't necessarily need a ton of, like, crazy special effects. You just had to deal with the man,
right?
You know, himself, which helps in the special effects department. Because the one that I was thinking about with a whole lot of special effects, my favorite of mine was Spider-Man. And I didn't see the very last Spider-Man where he's
Me
all
neither.
Black. But, like, I just remember the one with where Alfred Molina was the villain, and he
Octopus?
Yeah. And, like, it was just, like, I swear, it was just so much CGI. I was like, is anybody acting?
Right.
Because, and I know it's fair. I understand, believe me, I understand how hard it is to do all this stuff post-production
yeah.
and put all of this stuff together and make it look so spectacular, which is fantastic. It looks so spectacular. But I want to see a story.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I don't want to see a whole bunch of pictures on a screen.
Right.
So.
Right. Exactly. I hear you.
So,
ultimately, we just sort of liked it, and yep. I was pleased.
It gave you hope.
It gave me hope, and it made me giggle. It made me laugh a lot, mm-hmm. a lot more than I expected. And I think some of that is my expectations of it were so low mm-hmm. that really any joke that hit home was mm-hmm. going to was going to make me laugh.
Okay, we saw one good movie, we saw one bad movie, we saw one Brad movie. Well, I'm going to explain
okay,
to you.
Okay, good, bad, and Brad.
I'm going to explain to you good, bad, and Brad. It's what we use to rate
Super Bowl commercials.
Super Bowl commercials, but I feel like it applies to this movie. Some of them are good, some of them are bad, and Brad is just terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to start off by saying that Prom in theaters was Brad.
Really?
Yes. Oh. Worst Prom ever was bad.
Okay.
And the third movie that we thought was good was Bridesmaids.
Yes.
So I say let's start with the Brad.
Okay. Well, we've already talked about this a little bit.
Yes.
Okay, about how much we absolutely hated the Disney prom movie.
Yes.
That I pray is no longer in theaters.
Yeah, that was just completely incomplete.
Yes.
Worst prom ever. Go ahead. Bad.
It was bad. It did not suffer under the misapprehension that prom is squeaky clean and thus still interesting. It actually gave its characters some sort of goofy, pratfall, unrealistic setups. I liked it. It was still unrealistic. Mm-hmm. It's almost as though prom was rewritten and became worst prom ever, but actually made it a marginally, and I do mean marginally, like +5 points better movie. I don't really remember much about it.
Because it was that bad.
It was sort of forgettable.
I agree and disagree with you. I thought it was decent. It came on made for TV. I thought it was a low on the made for TV scale.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that
very low
on the made for TV scale. But I didn't think it was as my expectations were high. I definitely think it was better than Prom,
yes.
The actual one that was in the theater.
Completely agreed.
I thought that, you know, the plots were unfeasible, not plausible. But I personally feel what hurt the film and what could have made the film 20 times better, which was a little bit disappointing to me, was the music, considering the fact that it was on MTV.
Yeah.
It's like they didn't have any good music.
Well, MTV doesn't play music anymore.
Well, anyway. I'm just saying they didn't have any good music in there. I mean, and there were so many popular songs out now that could have been a part of that soundtrack that would have made that movie
pop.
It would have moved from bad to decent.
Yeah.
Like, if they had just, I mean, I was just thinking some off the top of my head that would have made me, like, been like, oh my gosh, I almost like this film because I like to listen to the songs and the parts of it. And the songs they did throw in there, I thought almost hurt it.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, it's on MTV. I mean, I know MTV has no more street cred, but it's like you're on MTV. If anything, you could find good music to back your movie.
Yeah.
Come on now.
Yeah.
So that's what I really, I mean, the plot, you know, it's typical prom plot with crazy stuff happening.
Right.
So you got to give it to him. And I think that the acting was okay. If the acting was better, it maybe would have been a better film. But what are you going to expect from a whole bunch
of teens?
But
and a clearly inexperienced writing staff.
Yeah. But so that was my one beef with it, really, was that the music was so crappy that it made the film horrible.
Yeah. All right, so the good movie, because there's nothing more to be said about those other movies. The good movie was Bridesmaids, and we will be jumping on to the Bridesmaids bandwagon of people who really, really enjoyed this movie. My one caveat is, I like this movie. I like Kristen Wiig.
Kristen Wiig,
I like Kristen Wiig. I like Maya Rudolph. I really like Melissa McCarthy. She's one of my favorite actresses. I like really everyone in this movie. I thought it was an adult romance story. It is a good movie. Is it the best raunchy comedy with female cast ever? No. But it is a good movie, and I think it does fill a void that we have had in that we haven't seen girls being gross in a while. And they did a good job of it. But, you know, will it always be the shining beacon and the thing that we all strive for and miss? I don't think so. I think there are a few actors and screenwriters out there who might be able to surpass this. But I applaud all of the women who worked on this and all of the men who stood behind them on this and were willing to take a back seat to this to get this movie out.
Can I get on my soapbox for a second?
Yes.
About, and this is me living and existing in my bubble, but you know how they say, you know, art imitating life, life imitating art. Are you living up to the expectation that, you know, that you say? So only like, personally, probably 5 years ago, did I ever hear about this tinkling or inkling about women not being funny.
Mm-hmm.
Women, and like that being a thing, and that like coming into this world. And so, like, and I feel like it's one of those things that because it's said, people assume that it's true, and then they're like, oh, women, you know, women aren't funny.
It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Exactly. Because, like, I was like, women have always been funny to me. Like, Gilda Radner, her Gilda Live tape, I wore out.
I remember. Because
it was freaking hilarious. Yes. Like, as a kid. And You know, across the board, Rosie O'Donnell, hilarious to me. Ellen DeGeneres, hilarious comics.
Golden Girls, Roseanne.
All of these were hilarious.
Grace Under Fire.
I never understood that whole adage of women not being funny. So that just makes me mad that we keep saying it, mm-hmm. because I feel it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, or people are like... self-fulfilling it themselves, right. or expecting women not to be funny right. on screen. And so then when they are, like, we honor them. And so I think it's a little bit of a pushback with your bridesmaids. I'm not surprised that it does well, because these women are funny.
They're hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't doubt that at all. I think they're absolutely hilarious. And I think, but there has been, I think, a dearth of women gross out comedy. Other than Bridesmaid, which really is not gross out.
What do you mean by gross out comedy? I don't think it's gross out comedy. I just think it's funny women.
It uses bathroom humor.
Uh huh.
More than once.
Uh huh.
And sort of, I guess, bad sex jokes.
Uh huh.
Like jokes about having bad sex. Mm-hmm. Those two, we've seen those in guy comedies all the time, like 40-Year-Old Virgin, Knocked Up, not so much. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking like, it's on par with 40-Year-Old Virgin in terms of the amount of bathroom humor and sex jokes about, like, bad sex and mm-hmm. hurtful sex and painful sex mm-hmm. that it keeps with. I can't think of another one that's sort of done that with a mostly female cast or a female teller of the joke, for lack of a better word.
Okay.
You? I'm putting you on the spot.
I can't think of a movie
per
se that does that, but I feel like a lot of women touch on
it. A lot of stand-up comics use
touch
it.
On it. Yeah.
But even when they use it, it's like, oh, you're going blue. And it's not even... Guys would do it too, but they're stand-up comics who use those sort of jokes too also are called blue, and they get a sort of same backlash.
They are. I mean, yeah, it's not... Well, but Bridesmaids are... What is it? Rated R comedy, isn't it?
Is it rated R or was it PG-13?
I can't remember. But, like, I mean, yeah, so there is a certain level of comedy that you...
Right.
That you extend to. Like, I wasn't watching, Richard Pryor when I was 10 years old.
Right.
For a reason. Right. Like, Richard Pryor's... I mean, I could watch Bill Cosby, right. but, you know, Richard Pryor was it Up in Smoke? No, Up in Smoke was the other person's tour. But, like...
Yeah, I can't think of it.
I can't think of it now either. But
I feel it's Richard Pryor Live or
no,
he
was smoking and drinking. I don't know. Yeah. I feel like smoking was in the title. It was after he got clean off cocaine.
Okay.
But like, you know, but yeah, I wasn't listening to that when I was 10
right.
either. Yeah, so there are different types of comedy, but I feel like there are women who are just as funny as Richard Pryor being just as dirty and have always been
right.
just as funny as Richard Pryor
I
being
mean,
just
Lisa
as dirty.
Lampanelli is yeah. a great, well, but she's also an insult comic yeah. or... I think that's the
Queen of
term.
Mean. She calls herself the
okay.
Queen of Mean.
Queen of
so,
Mean.
Yeah.
So I, yeah, I, but I really, ultimately, I don't know. I mean, I like the movie. I didn't think it was out of character for any of these women to say these things. I don't think they are rare beings in the world that, you know, that women that talk about bathroom humor and bad sex mm-hmm. with each other and, you know, joke about it, have fun with it. It might be new for Hollywood.
Maybe.
And it might be new for guys. Some guys might not realize that women do talk about fun.
Yeah, which is just stupid.
Uh-huh. Right.
I agree with you. I thought Bridesmaids was hilarious. I thought it was completely well-written. I thought that there were fantastically funny scenes. Like I've said before, the scene on the airplane.
Yeah.
I feel like the scene on the airplane, what was the other one I was telling you this
morning? Where she's running across the street with the dress.
Yes. I feel like, if anything, those two scenes were worth me watching the film. Like, the rest of the film could have been them standing there going, la, 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 and I would have been, like, I was satisfied
right.
by watching those two scenes right. of her in the airplane.
What I liked about it was, and I have, this is sort of, it's a wonderful antidote to what I didn't start to like about Judd Apatow movies. I never saw 40-Year-Old Virgin
mm-hmm.
because it just grossed me out too early in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Knocked Up. I saw Superbad. I saw, I think, one or two others. But there's, it starts with these sort of raunchy jokes. It almost is like the movies all start the same way Swinger starts. and then it gets to a point in the middle of the movie that it starts to lag. Because it's guy comedy and, you know, they've done all the raunchy jokes. So now it gets to the emotional heartfelt stuff and they can't seem to figure out how to write that interestingly. But I liked that when it got to that point in this movie where like the characters have to grow, it didn't start to drag. And I don't know if that's because they were women and they could just keep that emotional pace, whereas for guys it's a little awkward. I don't know. I really don't know why, and I don't want to stereotype. All I know is I was invested in this movie from start to finish, versus I know in Knocked Up there is a point in the middle where you know, Seth Rogen's character realized, yes, the baby is on the way. Paul Reiser's character realizes they can't keep Paul Rudd's character realizes they can't keep being douches and whatever. And it starts to sort of meander a little bit until it gets further in. And, you know, you start to, well, at those points, I start to, like, look around the screen and figure out or imagine how the projector's working or whatever. I didn't do that with this. And I really, I don't know if that's a stronger writing staff. I don't know if that's better actors. I just don't know who to thank for that. But whoever needs to be thanked, I thank you.
With the movie Bridesmaids, it's obviously about a bunch of bridesmaids, a woman getting married, and the best, the maid of honor from when being asked to the wedding, kind of that's when it takes place. Having gone to...
What's the number now?
30.
Really?
I am at 30 weddings.
Oh, my goodness.
I think 30 and a half if I count the royal wedding.
Okay.
I watched on TV. Well, hey, if you invest 8 hours of your life in something.
Oh, okay. If you watch it from start to finish, then it's yours.
I think it's a half. I wasn't there, but it was that whole thing.
You put in your time.
Yeah. The stuff that she did at the showers and stuff is everything that I've ever wanted to do. Like, that was another beauty. I felt vindicated. It's like, yes, I feel exactly the same way. This is the most ridiculous crap that we've ever done. And I feel like it's one of those things where I feel like guys need to watch it, too. And I loved the fact that Kristen Wiig's character did these things and points out, and they obviously points out the ridiculousness of it, and obviously the characters in the movie go over the top and the ridiculousness of it, but it's the way I feel when I watch shows like Superbad or even Hangover. I feel like I'm delving into the guy's psyche a little bit, like something that I would have never seen before.
Right.
I feel like this is guys, this is women's psyche.
Yeah.
Delve into it for a second and you realize, but they do it so ridiculously that you're like, it's crazy, but you know what? There's a little bit of a nugget of truth to that. And like, I totally wanted to destroy the cookie. Like, I've been in places where I was like, yes, can we please destroy the cookie?
Or take home 6 puppies?
No. But the dumbness of giving away freaking puppies. What am I going to do with a plant?
Party favor.
What am I going to do with a plant? Like, yes. Seriously, why are you going to give me, like, it's just the ridiculous of it. And I love that of it. And I feel like if a guy saw this movie, I know guys don't think this way, but I want it to translate to them. We think it's just as ridiculous, but the thing is that as a woman, you go along with it.
Right.
And I feel like just like in The Hangover, it's like, who does that? Who steals a tiger?
Yeah.
You don't know, but you know what? I've seen a group of guys get together and make dumb decisions like that.
Yes.
So men, women get together and create bridal showers. That is our dumb decision. With
pretty
big
much.
Cookies.
Yes.
So,
and horses.
And horses.
Like,
and lemonade. I mean, it's ridiculous, but so think of it as you're stealing a tiger, as in Hangover. That is the bridal shower.
Yes. Yes, very much so. All right, we're nearly wrapping up, but we are going to get to our People's Pop Culture Moment.
Okay.
And
I've picked it this week.
Okay.
The People's Pop Culture Moment. I thought it was quite apropos. It's People's Pop Culture Moment 317.
Okay.
What's an Oprah? In 1984, a little-known 30-year-old from Mississippi takes over AM Chicago. Within weeks, she's trancing chat god Phil Donahue. 2 years later, Oprah Winfrey is nationwide.
Okay.
So this is in the People's Pop Culture Moment. I feel it's apropos because this week was Oprah's farewell final show.
Was it really?
Yes.
Okay.
She will. I feel like she will do specials like Barbara Walters. Like, an interview people, like the Dalai Lama, if she wants to, but there will no longer be an Oprah Winfrey show.
Daily
show.
Okay.
Because now she has her own network.
I know, but I feel we've been doing the last show for a year.
Yeah, I think so. Well, I think she's had a farewell year of shows. I'm just saying, I don't know all the logistics of it. And not for nothing, I've never been a huge Oprah fan. I'm going to say that out there, but I will give her props. She is an integral part of pop culture.
I agree.
And I have watched a couple of her shows and cried and seen, you know, a couple of the different interviews. And I appreciate everything that she's done, the giving that she's done, and the fact that she has given back to the communities. I mean, they talk about... And in this farewell, it wasn't even part of our farewell show. I think it was just like a discussion.
Part of the farewell year?
No, like Dateline NBC was doing a thing on it. But they were talking about how the fact that Opa had Harpo Studios in Chicago, and the place where she had it in Chicago, completely renovated the whole entire area. And how that brought life to there. And so I give her complete props for that. And I think she has built, I mean, Oprah is a franchise. Like, she is bigger than herself.
Yes.
You know, and it's amazing. And I don't always agree with everything that she says or what she does, but I feel like she's taken the talent that she has and has used it to her extreme and has made a massive empire that has helped a lot of people.
It has, but she has courted her fair share of controversy.
Yes, but everyone has. I mean, nobody's perfect. She's not a god.
To a lot of people, she is.
I know, but she's not. I mean, she's not a guy. I mean, yeah, nobody's perfect. I mean, people are going to make mistakes. People are going to do things wrong. They're going to say the wrong things. But that's because we're human. But then
she also won't correct. Like, the Oprah Book Club had its fair share of controversy. One of the biggest ones was James Frye's A Million Little Pieces, right? Mm-hmm. But the side part of that controversy is that Oprah has male writers on only. Like, for every female writer that she has on, 10 male writers.
Okay.
Even if they happen to be James Frye, who wrote a bad book. He wrote the first book. Mm-hmm. It was a nationwide bestseller. He was on Oprah. Then when it came out that it was a lie, he was on Oprah again. Mm-hmm. You know, but, you know, women writers, and I'm not just saying chick lit, this is really Jennifer Weiner's thing, is, like, they're not promoted in that same fashion. And this has been brought up to her. Mm. And she just doesn't feel the need to correct it.
Okay.
I'm not... Yeah, it's no secret. I'm not an Oprah fan. Mm-hmm. I'm not an Oprah hater.
Mm-hmm.
But I really, it's more of a, I'm an Oprah agnostic.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of don't care whether she exists or doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
What does bring her into my consciousness, though, and this is a little unfair, but it's the truth, are the controversies. Where it's like, you know, with the giveaways, people didn't realize the tax implications.
Uh-huh.
Or, like, the James Frye thing where she won't promote authors. Uh-huh. Or the Jay-Z thing. Was it Jay-Z or, no, who was the other one? Ludacris. When she brought Ludacris onto her show and just essentially, like, lambasted him for rap.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
I think it was Ludacris. Yeah, I'm almost certain it was Ludacris. Uh-huh. So those are the times when Oprah sort of enters my purview, and in those she doesn't always shine.
Mm-hmm.
I know she's done well, and I know she does good, and I know that she does not seek to do evil.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the things that I hear mm-hmm. are usually the controversy versus the good things, and I don't know if that's just because of what I choose to get my news and information from.
Well, like I said, regardless, you know, she's not a god. She is human, and she right. will make mistakes and do things. But I've never, I mean, as far as my one negative moment, I've never been happy with the way she deals with weight. Never. I don't think she's comes at it at the right angle across the board. I think it's fantastic that she's helped so many women get healthy with her walking and her magazine and all of that type of
right.
stuff. I think that's fantastic. But personally, I just kind of feel the headspace that she's in and the headspace that she shares is not a healthy headspace for people to be in when discussing weight.
Yeah.
But that's my own personal issue. But besides that, I think she's fantastic. I mean, I think that's fantastic, but I don't consider her God. I think it's that I don't know if there's another one that can fill the void, because part of it was her personality. She had a little bit of that mammy personality from The Help that I don't like so much,
mm-hmm.
But a little bit of that mothering personality when she talked to people, and she could talk to white women and black women just the same.
Equally,
and it spoke to them just the same. So she had that type of mothering personality, but the wisdom and intelligence, like you didn't think that she was just lying to you as to what she was,
right.
you know, what she was saying, and a sincerity. I really truly sincere. I don't think Oprah got up in the morning to say, hey, I'm gonna fuck with the women of America today.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she got up and she's like, okay, I'm gonna try and help wherever I can.
I want to pass on this cool thing that I've just heard about.
Exactly.
Or, yeah,
and I think
experienced.
That sincerity comes through. And I don't think there's anyone that can fill that at
See,
the moment.
And actually that was going to be my question, because you're always the one who's like, it's not enough for specifically African Americans to just be successful. We have to make a way and raise up the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, if I may call you out, one of your beefs with Tyler Perry is...
No, my beef with Spike Lee.
Okay, Spike Lee. Let's, mm-hmm. let's put it where it belongs. Your beef with Spike Lee is he set out to create this production company and do his work and make his films, and didn't, and sort of closed the door behind him. Mm-hmm. He didn't, it doesn't seem like he did. Yeah. I mean, we might be totally wrong. There might be a lot of black filmmakers that we just haven't been paying attention to. But it doesn't seem like he left the door open for anybody else to follow behind him or be just as big and just as bold. And sort of we're seeing something semi-similar, but I'm actually going to give it to Tyler. I think he is actually working on leaving the door open behind him. But do you think Oprah closed the door behind her? In every, because she wasn't an instant star, you know. She had to battle the other daytime shows and, you know, make a name for herself. And then her show sort of changed format back and forth until it became the current iteration of the Oprah show that we know. And so she had to sort of surpass each level. Do you think she sort of closed the door behind her?
I don't know. Here's my defense of that. Mm-hmm. Let me start back with the Spike Lee bit. Mm-hmm. The thing with my Spike Lee thing is that, and this is why we possibly don't know. We know his production company was 40 Acres and a Mule.
Right.
He used that to produce his own films.
Right.
Spike Lee joint and, you know, produced 40 Acres and a Mule. I feel like if his production company had been bigger, and I don't know the logistics of how these things work, it's just kind of like there should have been a slew of films production house coming out of 40 Acres and a Mule, and it could have been like the black film production company,
right?
You know, where things go, like United Artists,
right?
You know, it's like all these artists got together and created a film company, and United Artists produce artist mm-hmm. films, and it's like 40 Acres and a Mule just produce Spike Lee stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, so there are other film writers and screenwriters. How come you're not producing other people's films? And that have the, like, they could have their own company. Because, I mean, we know how many title cards come before
right.
a production film. So I'm not saying that some other young designer, young producer, or young filmmaker doesn't want it to come from their own company. But it'd be like, stamp, 40 Acre and a Mule, stamp, new young producers company, etc. that
I mean, but
thing.
Like, okay, take another writer-director that we know very well is Kevin Smith. View Askew only did Kevin Smith movies.
Yeah, I get it, and I don't, and it, but on the flip side, and maybe this is my own perspective, I personally think Spike Lee got bigger than Kevin Smith, but that's just my own personal perspective.
No,
it could
right.
be not as big, and I, like I said, I don't
well,
know.
Well, Spike Lee went with dramas, and Kevin really went with comedy.
And it's like Tyler Perry Studios is growing to that size, where it's like, he has his own production company,
apparent studio
and stuff, and I'm kind of like, okay, so you've done that. Now there are lots of other black writers out there that are getting pigeonholed into these in studios where they maybe submit scripts or send in stuff, and they're like, oh, that's the black script, we're not going to do a black film
right.
this year,
right.
black's not selling,
right.
go over here, wait it out. And
right.
I was like, there are these production companies now that exist that they should take these scripts if they're good
mm-hmm.
and create them, and I feel like Spike Lee didn't do that. So that's my beef. With Oprah, to Oprah, I kind of do agree with you. I feel like Oprah never stopped fighting, so I don't know if she ever had a chance to clear the path behind her.
Mm.
That's just my own personal experience.
Like, it was always, like, she wasn't really a trailblazer so much as, like a person, like a rock climber. Like, she didn't actually end up clearing the path in front, like, as she went by. She just overcame all the different obstacles that came
that were in front of her. And I don't know if she had, if she was so busy climbing the mountains in front of her that she didn't have the time to make the path
behind her smoother.
To build it. I mean, maybe now, if when she stops making her show, that now she'll be able to do that. I mean, that's just my own personal feeling,
right.
that she was always clawing her way to the top. And as much as, and I think she gave as much as she could while fighting to get there.
Right.
But I mean, because they're doing the whole thing, search for a new talk show host.
Yeah.
But I don't really think that's the same.
No.
But like, and so she never really had a chance to sit, you know, to be like, okay, here's what it is. But I feel like Spike Lee had gotten to the pinnacle. Like, he's like, I've opened up my production company.
Right.
I am here. I'm doing movies. You know, I feel like he had a chance to then bring people up. I think maybe now Oprah, if she wants to continue, I mean, I'm sure she's freaking tired. I would be tired. But, like,
you know, but there's some people who just feed off that.
True.
And to remove that from them just hurts them more than constantly doing it.
Could be. But, like, I feel like, but yeah, I just kind of feel like she was always climbing to the top, that she never had a chance to
sort of
back.
Like, I envision, this is so silly, I envision, like, the first early Western settlers mm-hmm. just sort of climbed over everything, but then there was the group who came by with the dynamite and they just blasted everything out of the way.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, if you imagine, Oprah's one of the early Western settlers.
Yeah.
Like, she didn't have time. She didn't have the dynamite. She just... Her goal was to just get as far as she could.
And like the
and
little...
she got pretty far.
Exactly. And the jerry-rigged makeshift bridges that the settlers had helped the ones coming behind them, but they weren't permanent.
Right. And you still had to do a lot. But then after the people blew everything away, it was easy for everybody to do their stuff. I wonder, actually, even what the medium of daytime talk shows is going to look like. I mean, they're all sort of... dead, dying, changing.
I think they're changing. I think, like, well, you know, her and Ellen competed now for the four o'clock slot. I think Ellen's going to blow up. I mean, Ellen, I always thought was a fantastic show, and I didn't have time to watch it anymore. But she's a different, completely different format than Oprah. You know?
Very much so. She's sort of like late night in the day.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
Oprah was different, but and then also networks are getting rid of the daytime soaps.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm actually really interested to see what daytime TV looks like
going
forward.
Yeah. I don't know. And like all of our, and I would say, like, you know, back in the day it would be game shows.
Yeah, but
our game shows are now at night. Like, and it's Win
are.
It and what's that one, the briefcase show and Millionaire.
Deal or No Deal, Millionaire.
They're all primetime now. Actually, that's quite exciting, I think, to figure out, because they're
gonna be interesting.
They're canceling all these soaps. We don't have game shows anymore, which is what used
we
to come
like
on.
We have a few, but not like we used to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that used to come on in the daytime. I don't know if they're going to plan on bringing them back. But see, part of it now is what I was kind of saying. You know, we don't have Saturday morning cartoons anymore because we have the Cartoon Network.
Yeah.
We have the Game Show Network now.
Yeah.
Like, we have networks for all of this stuff that we don't put on normal TV. I really do miss Saturday morning cartoons. There was something special about getting up and watching at a certain time your cartoon.
Yeah.
But now you can watch it 24/7 on Cartoon Network.
Or Hulu if you miss it.
Oh, yeah. Game Show Network.
You know what
now?
I wish they would bring back? And I think the only reason they had this in the beginning was because they didn't know what to put there. I wish they'd bring back the midday movie.
Mm.
And it would just be a battle, like, just to know at, like, noon or 1 o'clock, whenever the midday, I don't even remember midday news cycles being around in like the 80s. Like, the news was in the morning and it ended at 8, and then it didn't come on again until 6.
Yeah.
But like,
there wasn't news at noon. Yeah.
That at noon or at 1, if you have to keep the noon news cycle, at 1, from 1 to 3, it's a movie on every channel, and you can check and see which movie it is, and that's what you watch while you're sick.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd really love them to bring back, like, the midday movie. And it's not like there aren't enough movies.
I don't know.
But...
could be. Or we could end up with a whole bunch of judge shows. There are a ton of judge shows.
There are a ton of judge shows. I think we're going to end up with a lot of judge shows to fill the air, or just an elongated news cycle, which... don't even get me started on the 24-hour news cycle that I just cannot stand.
Do you really think that the...
They added an hour to the Today Show. I would not be surprised if, going forward, CBS also adds an hour to the morning show. Fox already comes on. It ends at, I think, 8 or 9. But it has a midday news show.
Mm.
And then it starts again at 4.
Mm.
You know, I would not... I would be quite upset if they did extend the news coverage, because then my issue with the 24-hour news cycle is it creates stories.
Uh-huh.
Like, I mean, not that I believe that all of this stuff wasn't happening before we started reporting on it, but it makes stories out of things that shouldn't be stories. And then it, of course, ignores stories that should be stories.
Yeah.
And it gives commentators things to fill time with. So you get... like, the issue that everybody has with Nancy Grace that I do, too, is you ask the same question over and over and over again because you have to fill your hour, even though this person who didn't know anything at the start of the hour still knows nothing at the end of the hour.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think it'll be a mix of judge shows, maybe one or two of the syndicated game shows. Maybe they have enough showings of Wipeout now to run a few of those. I just think it would be classier, as I have been mentioning, to... give it a break. Like, it's almost like when we were coming up, there was a time to watch TV, which was in the morning for your news. If you were sick, you would watch it through Price is Right or one of the early game shows. And then there was a time in the middle of the day when nothing was on, which to us sent the trigger of turn it off.
No, there were soap operas on.
There were soap operas, but like, it wasn't for us.
Yeah,
and,
there were soap operas on. But now they're going to be gone.
Yeah, they're going to be gone. I just think it would just be classier for TV to go, you know what, you can turn us off right now.
Mm-mm.
I know they won't, but it just, there was, there were sort of, I feel for us when we were growing up, there were hours when TV was TV, and then there were hours when it just wasn't worth it.
I don't know. I feel like there were soaps. I feel like when I was growing up, it was like there was the news, when we were growing up, but there was the news in the morning, which I never actually watched.
Right.
I don't even think I recognized or understood the Today Show.
Yeah.
Until later. But there was news in the morning, and then it was like, in my head, it was like soaps starting from 10 to 3 p.m.
No, but you know it wasn't, because there were at least 2 hours of game
yes.
shows that we used to like to watch.
Yes.
We didn't really understand all the rules.
Yes.
But we used
so
to
game shows and then soaps until like 3 or 4 o'clock
right.
in the afternoon.
And then
I'd have
our shows would come on.
Yeah, well, like our shows being like syndicated, either sometimes Saved by the Bell or some cartoons, and then like syndicated Roseanne,
mm-hmm.
Cosby Show,
right.
et cetera. Carmen Sandiego.
Yeah, into the evening.
Into the evening.
Into about like 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
And then the news cycle starts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that I do remember, but it was a huge, I mean, I just felt like the whole rest of the day was all soap operas.
Yeah. But those are pretty much gone. I mean, there's still a few soap operas still on. I think NBC kept it.
Yeah.
I think they
yeah,
kept
it. Yeah, but no, I just
lives.
Think it's very, but you know, a trend starts, things start to change. I think it's going to be really interesting to figure out what's going to fill Oprah's void, what's going to fill the soap opera void.
Yeah. And I would actually be fine with something different rather than something that's Oprah light
mm-hmm.
or soap opera light. I think that's a terrible position to be in.
Yeah. Well, I figure why cancel? I mean, I don't think it's going to be. I mean, the fact that Oprah decided to leave,
mm-hmm.
but canceling a soap opera, I'm not they're going to replace it with a new soap opera. Like, why cancel a soap opera that works? I mean, because soap
yeah.
opera fans are like sci-fi fans. They're freaking loyal.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, and I'm not even a soap opera fanatic, but I know Days of Our Lives.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, like, so people are loyal to that stuff. So why try and start a new one in the same slot? That's dumb. You already
yeah.
have a fan base.
Yeah.
So they must have some idea of something else that they're going to put there.
Well, we hope. We
that
can
would
only
be
hope.
The smart thing.
We
but,
can only
you know,
hope.
Who says TV execs are smart?
Yeah.
Like, but
well, I guess we'll see.
Yeah. Thanks for stopping by and spending time with us. This is Squirt.
This is Sis.
You'll know us when you see us.